You're listening to the Prairie Monk Show on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, and we have a guest come in here, and the guest is Mike Feldman, who is another air shifter and
good morning
helps run the board when we have live bands in here every Monday night. In fact, is your son coming down tomorrow?
Are you
sure
is.
Yet?
The plan is that he and the full trio will be here, so that's for West Sessions tomorrow night, the Labor Day edition of West Sessions.
At 10 p.m.?
10 p.m. this time. No more deferrals due to conventions.
Are they doing a jazz combo thing?
No, they're a rock combo.
More rock?
Yeah, so this is a vehicle for John Phillips, who's originally from North Carolina and is a piano player, guitar player, singer, songwriter, and has been putting together a rock band that's rolling through several incarnations over the last year and a half in Chicago since he moved to Chicago.
Is a guy named Gilbert?
No, but the drummer, the current drummer, is Matt Kotheimer, who's Paul's little brother. So
appeared on some of Paul's recordings, I think.
I haven't checked, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I've read the fair few liner notes. So, yeah, I think here and there.
So, anyway, that's tomorrow night, and I'm looking forward to another round of nepotism.
So that's Alex Feldman and John Phillips and possibly Matt Kotheimer tomorrow night. West Sessions, 10 p.m.
I live next door, and I come in often to listen to Monday night because I think it's extremely helpful to have local talent expressing itself and doing very well at it.
So by trade, you are?
By trade, I'm a software engineer.
Uh-huh.
I type for a living.
But not just anything. But
mostly email.
He's an electrical engineer by trade, too. Although he's a more general engineer.
Actually, I'm a general engineer. I never did so well in electrical engineering or the electronics end.
You weren't a Bardeen associate.
No. But, when I started college, I thought I was going to be in some form of material science. And I couldn't decide between ceramics and metallurgy. And so I just parked in general engineering because I knew that the first 2 years of the engineering curriculum were basically the same.
Yeah.
No matter what department you were in.
Yeah.
And I managed to come out of it specializing in control systems.
Yeah.
Well, he's telling me about his mother being a grad student, and he,
at
a useful age, had to work with Stoliro and Company doing programmed instruction, and he was wiring boards.
Yes, that was when I was in high school. My mother was being a grade school teacher or junior high school teacher. It would be middle school around here, but...
Uh-huh.
She was always taking graduate level education classes in the summers, and I was fortunate enough to go to a art camp at Allerton Park, and the week after, or the 2 weeks after that camp was over, rather than finding my way back to my hometown, I just came over here and lived with my mother, who had gotten an apartment at Orchard Downs for the summer. And she took me down into the basement of Lincoln Hall and introduced me to her professor. But I was kind of rubbernecking through the glass walls at all these blinking lights, you know, wondering about what that big thing that said IBM on it was actually doing. And so her professor took me into the director of the computer-based learning project and introduced me as a computer expert. You know, and I was...
What age were you?
I was, 16? it was between my sophomore and junior years in high school.
For those that don't know, this was one of the early attempts to do programmed instruction.
There were two teaching machine projects on campus. And Plato was one of them, and the one that I got involved with was called Socrates. And, of course, it sort of withered and never went anywhere, and the Plato project blossomed. And
Stolyarov moved out of town, but Anderson remained here and did a lot of cognitive education work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it hasn't exactly been lost. Plato did blossom also with technology.
Well, at least the name survived.
Yeah.
So I was given a job wire wrapping interface boards to control slide projectors. You know,
they say you had a Kodak slide projector on your carousel.
On a carousel, and it was driven by a computer interface. And of course, those didn't exist as products in those days. In fact, graphical displays were cutting-edge research, and that's basically the direction Plato went with their plasma panels and had moderate success there, or actually pretty good success, yes, considering. The slide projectors, though, you know, you had to go do wet chemistry 35 millimeter slides and in order to present stuff, and there were no computer driven graphics. So in a programmed learning situation, you know, you are asked a question and get multiple choice answers, and depending on your answer, the teaching program would go to a different page or a different response to your based on your answer. And of course you had to wait while the 80 slide circular tray rotated around to its position, so it wasn't terribly snappy.
Sounds like control systems, though.
Well, that got me interested in an early age, and I was given this job, this set of listings, and said, here, you know, put wire from pin 22 on board 6 left-hand side and run that over to pin 46 on board 12. And I spent 2 weeks doing that, you know, 6 to 8 hours a day or whatever, you know, whatever our schedule was in those days. And the thing that really impressed me was at the end of it, I picked up my rack and carried it into my supervisor and said, well, I think I'm done. And he looked at me and said, okay, let's see if you're really done. And he opened a drawer and pulled out this large deck of punch cards and dropped them into the hopper on the in the computer room, and took this big cable and plugged it into the side of the rack I had just wired. And then he pushed some buttons, and the cards went clatter, clatter, clatter through the machine. And then it got real silent for a couple of minutes, and then all of a sudden the line printer was clattering and produced a few pages of output, and he went and tore them off and looked at them for a few seconds and then looked at me and said, you made 3 mistakes.
Huh.
Go fix them. And he handed me the output.
Oh, no.
So, but I was impressed that, you know, in that few seconds of silence, somehow that stack of cards managed to figure out what I had done.
Huh.
You know, what I'd spent 2 weeks doing.
Yeah.
Well, let's remind the public that what we're doing is we're having a teaser session.
Ah, and yes.
If you go back to New Orleans and you open the door just a little bit so you can see a few of the naked legs.
Or they come through a hole in the front wall,
yeah,
out onto the street.
This is what we're doing, because we want to eventually discuss drainage in the old part of Champaign.
Ah,
and
yes.
Mike, as a general engineer, has a good concept of this. In fact, his life has included a variety of things which we haven't dealt with right now, and we'll probably wait till we get
15
him on
minutes. We're probably not going
to
do it.
Things like 6 years of writing software to control wastewater treatment plants,
which I think separately Mike spent an hour each with Dave and me explaining, so maybe another show.
Yeah.
But it reminds me to tie together by saying that when you talk about control systems, a lot of industrial things in everyday life rely on these things, traffic lights, and
right,
in some form or another.
And in the day, in this modern day of microprocessors, the things that I would have spent 2 years working on, you know, that filled racks and rooms, nowadays,
you gotta get a microscope,
you know, they come in, you know, just as part of the of the thing that you buy, you know, the city buys to put up for streetlight controls and stuff like that.
But most manufacturing still has components of this stuff
going on. Definitely. In industrial controls, especially the large-scale things. Where I worked, we were into controlling power plants, both the actual turbines and boilers and also the distribution on the grid. And it was kind of interesting to take tours of, like, the Illinois Power dispatch center over in Decatur, you know, because it turned out that they were using equipment that the folks down the hall from me made.
Yeah.
And you know, things like cement plants and steel mills and, you know, large, heavy industry where the capital investment is so much that $1 million for advanced computer controls is really just a drop in the total capital investment. So it pays to put money into that thing for those big, large-scale industries.
It runs to huge networks. Like, we had a blackout a year or so ago that
there's a whole topic right there that covers the range from the engineering side of control systems all the way to the politics of government regulation.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's your topic, sir. On the local basis, you live in a somewhat older part of Champaign with a lot of basements and no detention.
Right.
Part of the old swamp.
We're sort of on the side of the hill. And
let me say that you're on the side of a Champaign Moraine. And
yes.
Champaign and Moraine.
Known as Yankee Ridge.
Well, yes, it's sort of turned around from Yankee Ridge. Yankee Ridge is sort of on the east. But with a moraine, you have a front side and a back side. And the front side is usually steeper, and the back side is usually gentle. And the back side is usually comprised of the rock and rubble that was dumped. And so there's an unevenness. And sometimes, actually, the ground will drop. And
well, yeah, where there
sometimes
were...
Sometimes they're known as buffalo wallows because...
Right, and where there were the last big remaining chunks of ice, the last things to melt, make these depressions.
And sort of
like the Great Lakes.
Yes, so right. We've got little ones, you see. And so there's runoff here, and just to put your imagination somewhere up on the top of the hill where the country club is, in the general area, running back down to the boneyard. And sort of, we've got to catch you a picture here. So what we're going to ask you to do is, Mike, when he comes on for real, and we're not quite sure when this will be, we want him to come with maps. So we want you to pull up a web page and look at a map while Mike is talking. Or we have to do the other thing, which is kind, which is to give you a verbal picture. And that's not always easy. But let's go ahead on that basis.
It's not hard if you're walking around in the neighborhoods, and I walk around my neighborhood 3 or 4 times a day, being led by a large dog, and I get, you know, take that half an hour walk to contemplate the lay of the land, and the country club is rather steep going up to the country club, but I think that's the backside of the moraine.
Yes.
If you go toward West Side School along either John Street or Daniel Street, where I live, or any of the east-west streets, there's a much gentler slope. And the neighborhood that I live in was one of the first ones to extend west of Prospect in the late teens and early 20s, and south of Springfield. The city had grown up along Springfield Avenue and University Avenue to the west of Prospect. You know, there are a lot of older houses, but our neighborhood, I guess, was platted before 1913, because it shows up on a 1913 map, but it never really, the project never got off the ground until the 20s. So I think that the first house in the neighborhood was built in 23, except for the original farmhouse.
You can tell the area basically because these were the houses that were developed and trees were in that area were fast-growing trees that had now got to be 50 years old, and so a very recent tornado took out something like 130 trees in this particular development.
Clark Park is the center of that neighborhood, and it was like exactly in the center of the plat.
Let me bring Bill in here a little bit, because Bill is a water person, and he has to answer questions about these sorts of situations.
I didn't think I'd have to do it now. we'll define the neighborhood. It's in Champaign. It's just south of Springfield and north of the Country Club, west of Prospect, and east of Russell. And Russell is really the high point, sort of the watershed divide.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, so
and it's sloping from Russell Street
on top of
West Side
that.
School.
So if you're standing just east of West Side School is where the actual ridge is.
Right.
You get a nice long vista
right.
downhill, and you can see where the bottom is. I found an old map in a 1884 atlas. It was not a map, but
he
an artist.
He has it up on a laptop here in front of me.
A bird's eye view of Champaign, and it shows the stream bed whose headwaters were Clark Park, and it ran through what is now the intersection of Prospect and John Street, and the drawing even shows that in the center of the street there's this little board bridge, one lane wide, whereas the dirt road was, you know, two lanes wide or wider.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this narrow little bridge over the stream, and then the stream proceeded east, basically along the route of John Street and where the interurban tracks went. In those days, although the 1884 map was predated the interurban tracks. But the entire neighborhood basically filled in the stream bed and replaced it with 8-inch storm tiles along all of the streets.
Basically meaning a pipe.
A pipe, underground.
Mm-hmm. But you remember, it's a pipe the size of a drinking straw. It's not enough to pipe much water.
Relatively.
Right. Compared to today's standards, it was undersized. In fact, I think they had spec'd 12-inch pipes and were unable to get 12-inch pipes when they were ready to do the construction, so they said, okay, let's go with 8.
So what is the problem you're experiencing now?
So, it's not a problem that we're experiencing now. It's a problem that we've been experiencing for ever since I've lived there, for the last 24 years, which is that the intersection of Daniel and Willis, which is where the stream bed used to be, is a low spot. And it fills up with water knee-deep on the bigger rains, and it takes hours for it to drain out of there after the rain stops. So anytime we get more than an inch of rain in an hour on already saturated ground, or 2 to 3 inches of rain in an hour on dried ground, That intersection plus the backyards that go into where the old stream bed, you know, between Daniel and John Street on toward Prospect. I mean, you can think of Prospect Avenue as a dam across what used to be the stream.
Mm-hmm.
And so those backyards fill up with water, and there's no natural drainage there, nor is there any artificial drainage in the backyard. So that water ponds there and stays for
some time. So we should charge you extra for swimming pools.
if you like swimming in that sort of water, I mean...
I heard about raccoons living in these pipes.
Yes, families of raccoons, I see them, you know, maybe once a month I'll see a family of raccoons scurrying in or out of one of the storm drains, typically in the summertime in dry weather, or coming out in wet weather. But the city, in response to the complaints of a few neighbors to see if we can't do something about it, actually produced a report, and the city council had a study session a week ago Tuesday where the report was presented, and a bunch of neighbors stood up and made statements. And what wasn't considered in the original city report, but which came out very clearly when the neighbors started talking, was that not only do the storm sewers back up into their basements in addition to ponding in the yards, but if it rains heavily enough, the sanitary sewers will back up as well. And, you know, so we were all comparing notes, and a lot of us have just dealt with it ourselves by installing valves in the basement level sanitary sewer hookup. So if you have a washing machine or utility sinks or things like that, we just have either check valves, which clog up and stop working. I have a ball valve that's, but then I have to remember to go and turn it off when a big storm is threatening.
So it's an active control, basically.
Yes.
Operator.
Human operated.
Okay. Yeah.
Controls. And
so what are you thinking of? An open ditch like the Boneyard, and you're going to take out a recreational pathway through the corridor?
The city recognizes that none of the property owners want to volunteer up their property to turn into a detention basin or a swale. You know,
well, they don't worry about that in the north end. They just take it over. They resume their properties. There's a federal agency that does that in the St. Louis area, all around the lowlands there. They acquire the houses and make a scenic strip.
Well, there you have a much more severe flooding problem.
Especially if it's substantially damaging the structures, which is not the case here.
Uh-huh. Well, it just damages the things within the structures, you know.
Yeah.
So we're talking about running a survey around the neighborhood to get a feel for how many people actually do experience flooding. And I'm trying to get the question of, have you had economic losses? Like, I had a freezer die prematurely because it was drowned a few times. And I've had to repair my washer and dryer and change my furnace filters and relight the pilot light on the hot water heater and replace the hot water heater early because it rusted out in the bottom, you know, all because it was submerged.
So these are things that might be quantifiable, but in general, it's obvious there's an infrastructure limitation.
But in general, there's an infrastructure limitation. The city admits that, you know, the storm sewers are sized for a 1 year storm, whereas the current standard is the size for a 10-year storm. And in the last 20 years, we've had at least two 50-year storms.
That is another topic for another show, actually.
I'm watching the clock a little bit here.
Yeah, we're out of time.
What we're doing is we're introducing you to a problem, and what we want to do is run a session which might involve you looking at maps at the same time, especially if you live in the district. It might even involve us taking you on a field trip, if Mike were willing.
I hadn't thought of that. That's a good idea. You'll be back in contact with the city. Do I understand correctly? You're basically using some of your technical expertise as a citizen to work with.
One of the things that Mayor Schweigert said in closing on the issue at the city council study session was that he highly recommended that a neighborhood association be formed to work with the city staff in exploring the possibilities and understanding the problem better. And in fact, I participated in one of those several years ago when our old series powered streetlights were going to be torn down and the neighborhood wanted to keep street lighting in the neighborhood. And we spent a year with several of us from the neighborhood working very closely with the city staff to come up with an actual workable plan. And that actually worked out pretty well and has gone off into other branches of city politics as other neighborhoods had to go through the same problem.
And that was part technical issues, part economic, and part political.
Yeah, sure. Money.
And decision making.
Like I'm talking about with something like the assessment of a Pepsin factory, it's not a simple thing.
It requires
a lot of expertise. And the sort of people you bring in to do this run at $1,000 a day. It's not cheap stuff. So then if you're in a position that you don't have money, you have to ask perhaps the state for a grant to work on this.
Yes.
Or part of the city budget. And the city has a way to prioritize projects of the scale around the city, and that's part of what...
right. But
is part of the discussion
to,
as well.
To close off our teaser for a later session, one of the things I want to do is not just to look at that one intersection and the few backyards that are suffering the brunt of water accumulation, but to look at it from the point of view of the entire city, because drainage is a problem almost everywhere when it rains hard enough.
Oh, the Boneyard, we've had the Neal Street Dam, and we've had the Green Street
Water Pond, and
the hole in the ground, and the Boneyard, and water pump from Kmart through to the north end of the Salt Fork. It never ends in a community that's dependent on a glaciated soil.
Right. So we definitely want to look at the whole problem and have, as you were saying earlier, a master plan and not just Band-Aid solutions to wherever the neighbors are squeaking the loudest.
The master plan need not be set in concrete, but it needs to be there so that there you can tie things onto it.
Yes, indeed.
Okay,
well thanks for coming in with a short notice. And
we'll,
a few meetings
we'll
down
talk
the line.
Again
we'll,
you want to go next week?
October.
Or?
Well, I was thinking beginning of October because we plan to meet with the city late in September.
Let's do it then. We'll announce it. We'll get you organized and we'll get your map up. And those that are efficient with their web pages will get access to it.
That's right. Thanks for coming in. This is Mike Feldman, Champaign resident and the WEFT Air Shifter.
WEFT, yes.
And this has been?
I want to say one thing. I'm looking for seed pickers. Please, this afternoon, 1 o'clock. Thank you. And I am Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WFT Champagne 90.1 on your FM dial. And
I'm Bill Saylor. Thanks for tuning
thank
in.
Thank you all for helping that.
Shruti, Music of India, is next.